Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And I just want to thank you all for your tremendous support here for this podcast, both in the audio format and on YouTube. If you're looking for an easy way to support this podcast, please consider joining the Kung Fu Genius Patreon. You can support for as little as $5 a month and get access to episodes a few days early. Higher levels of support will even get additional goodies, exclusive content, and even your name in the description. The baller level of support will give you the opportunity to be Dre for a day and give me a rest from this guy here. A link for the Kung Fu Genius Patreon page is in the description below. You can also support us by subscribing to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube, liking this video, and sharing it on your social media platforms. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of Yip Man driving around in cars, and lots of the Kung Fu craze wasn't started by Bruce Lee or David Carradine. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
Yo, what's up, Sifu? What's good?
What's up with you, man? You're looking like budget-ass Pitbull over there. What's going on?
What do you mean?
What's up with the glasses? Yeah.
It's mad bright in here for some reason. It's mad early.
Got it.
It's 9 a.m.
Yeah, Mr. Countywide.
Mr. Countywide over there. The budget version of Pitbull. He's not worldwide. He's countywide.
Richmond County.
Yeah. No, what's up? What are you talking about?
It was good. What's good with the get-up?
What do you mean the get-up? I gotta work after this today. I gotta go to work after this. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you mean. You're bouncing too?
No, after the podcast, I teach martial arts. That's what I do for a living. I gotta work after that.
You're working in the suit. You're teaching in the suit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, you know, like you, you often have to work after the podcast, so you come dressed up, trying to make me look like a straight ass, and but I realized, hey, today I also have to work after the podcast, so I came dressed as well.
The difference is that you come dressed up, he just threw that together.
That's right. You have a stylist, you plan this out. This is just, I found this at the bottom of my closet. Of the KFG closet.
That's why it looks so neat and polished.
Yeah, because I never wear it. That's why.
Okay.
So sure. we got another AMA today.
Yes, we do.
So let's get cracking,
man. Let's get this party started. All right. So first up, let's get right into it. We got Wing Chun Fist.
Okay.
Okay. Please tell us a bit about that British chap. And a bit more about Dre. Are they students, instructors, employees? Oh, who is this? I like this person.
I like this guy.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing? Shout out to Wing Chun Fist.
Yeah, Wing Chun Fist gets the okay from me.
I don't know. This guy sounds like he's from the IRS, and he wants to know if you guys are independent contractors or actual employees of City Wing Chun Incorporated, right?
He's from the IRS, totally. Yeah.
Right? This is like they're fighting out. So wait, are these guys on a 1099, or who are these guys? Very clever. Wing Chun Fist. Very clever.
Wow.
Under the advice of my lawyer, I cannot say anymore.
But I see through your ruse, and I ain't answering that. These guys are looking out for us, Mikey Dean. These guys are just dudes who walk on by and come in here, we talk a little bit, and then they leave and I never see them again.
Mm.
The British guy, as a matter of fact, I don't even know where he's from. Dre and I started doing this podcast, and that guy just started showing up. And we haven't been able to get rid of him, and that's pretty much it. So,
I'm actually from Great Britain. There's a clue in the British guy thing.
So, he's a victim of Brexit. So let's go to the next one.
All right, JKD Merit Master Group.
That's quite the handle.
Curious, how much Mantis Kung Fu have you looked into? And if so, did you see the similarities between Wing Chun and, let's say, Mantis or Dragon?
That's a good question. One thing I have to make clear, because not everyone in our audience is going to know like the differences, there are two main streams of what is known as mantis kung fu. So you actually just cannot say praying mantis or mantis, because there is a northern mantis mm-hmm. and a southern mantis that have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And so if you just say mantis kung fu, we go northern or southern, all right? Mm. Because the one of the most famous streams of northern mantis, the seven-star mantis, is the one that you've seen with the hooks, right? Where they have the kind of mantis-looking hook hands, right? You see wow. that in films, and obviously in the practitioners who do that martial art. That's the northern mantis style. Southern mantis style doesn't use that kind of hooked hand mantis thing. Southern mantis is actually much more closely related to Fujian or Fujian white crane. These are southern martial arts that were developed and brought over by these Hakka tribes who came from the north, and they brought these into Guangdong. So the Hakka tribes are basically, they're these nomadic northern tribes that had their own martial arts, and they came to Fujian and mixed their martial arts with Fujianese martial arts, white crane, and brought those over to Canton. So they're actually the ones responsible, because people always go like, well, how did Fujianese martial arts, so Fujian is the next province next to Guangdong, Canton. So the question is always, well, how did these martial arts from Fujian get to Guangdong? And most likely the connection was through the Hakka people. Hmm. And so they took these styles and they mixed it with their own indigenous martial arts styles. And then essentially Hakka martial arts are really the seeds of a lot of orthodox southern martial arts in China. So even Wing Chun has some Hakka roots. Southern mantis is a Hakka style. White eyebrow is a Hakka style. And there, I believe there's even a southern dragon style, which is Hakka oriented, right? So you have to be careful when you just say mantis, because it's like, well, which mantis are we talking about, right? Southern mantis, because it is a Hakka style, is very closely related to Wing Chun and very closely related to White Crane. White Crane is kind of the OG, and a lot of the southern martial arts come from that White Crane base. And so you see a lot of those things. And when we talk about White Crane, it's also, we're not talking about the pecking crane that most people think from the Hongkun tiger crane form or from the films. We're talking about the more open hand palm style crane. The White Crane is not this pecking crane, right? And you see the White Crane DNA in Wing Chun, you see the White Crane DNA in Hongkun, and you certainly see the White Crane DNA in Southern Mantis, because they have forms like the Samjin, which bear pretty much the same name with one character change as the original White Crane style. Mm. And that form is very similar, except they change a lot of the open palm stuff to the Phoenix Eye Fist. So I became...
Wow.
Yeah, I became really interested in Southern Mantis because of like a two major things that kind of piqued my interest there. One, there's a famous Wing Chun Sifu named Wan Kam Leung. Wan Kam Leung is a student of the late great Wong Sun Leung. And Wan Sifu in the late 70s, he started to learn Southern Mantis. So he had already learned from Wong Sun Leung for many years. He was one of his very early students. And then in the late 70s, I believe he learned from Yip Soi. Yip Soi was the former, he was kind of like, imagine what Yip Man is to Wing Chun, Yip Soi was to Southern Mantis in Hong Kong. He's kind of like one of the main masters at that time. And even within Mantis, you always have these politics, right? So in Southern Mantis, you have the Zhao Ga, which is the Chao family, right? And so that is one stream of it. But then you also have the Jiu Ga, which is like another stream of it. And they are kind of from the same source, but there's a little bit of politics as to which one is the right one and so on and so forth. I'm a Wing Chun guy. I got no skin in the game, so I'm not even going to talk about that stuff, right? I'll let those guys litigate it. But anyway, Yip Soi is basically the kind of the main master. And so from what I understood, of course, I could be wrong on this, Wan Kam Leung learned from Yip Soi in the late 70s for a little bit. And later he went to redevelop his Wing Chun into what he calls a practical Wing Chun. And for anyone who's seen Wang Kam Leung's forms, you can see that he's basically re-engineered a lot of the Wong Sun Leung stuff to fit a slightly different idea that's based on his own experience and perhaps also based on some of his training in Southern Mantis. So that kind of piqued my interest because I go, oh, well, this is a style clearly that, you know, Wang Kam Leung, someone who's very famous in the Wing Chun style, you know, gave a lot of thought to because it's something that he practiced. And, you know, I don't know if he admitted it openly, but, you know, maybe his practical Wing Chun is somewhat influenced by that, right? So that made me want to, like, see what that was about.
Cool.
And then a few years ago, I was in Southern Florida having dim sum with one of my good friends, Li Xiuhong. Li Xiuhong, or Lei Xiuhong, actually, is a Choi Lei Phut master.
Yeah.
And he teaches in Florida. Been teaching there for many years, and he's the younger brother of Lei Kunhong. Lei Kunhong was like one of the most famous Choi Lei Phut masters, one of the best. And Lei Kunhong, like, he also learned from Sekkin Han from Enter the Dragon, but he was like one, like, very top of the food chain Choi Lei Phut practitioner. And when I was a kid, I bought, like, some of the Lei Kunhong books. Like, I remember I bought a book where he's showing how to, like, do a form with, like, a fan and stuff. And, like, so you know, as a kid, you want to learn all the cool kung fu stuff, right? So I remember going to the kung fu store, and Lei Kunhong had, like, all these awesome books on, like, learning to fight with fan and sword, all sorts of stuff, right? So I remember I had his books, and I would see him in the Inside Kung Fu magazines and knew that Lei Kunhong was very, like, famous, very famous Choi Lei Phut guy.
Yeah.
And eventually in the States, in the early 90s, I think in 93, Lei Kunhong immigrated from Hong Kong to Florida, which is kind of a bold move because he was a little older at that time. You know, it's like not normal.
Like 60s?
No. I think he was in his 40s already. But it's not really normal that, like, you know, normally if you're going to, like, change countries or whatever, usually people do that a little bit younger, right? They don't necessarily do that
pre-family.
When they're a little bit older and established. But from what I understood, I think his daughter was going to go to school in the States and he decided to come. And then so he decided to open a Choi Lei Phut school in Florida. And you have to imagine, this, like, Florida is not really, like, the hotbed of Chinese martial arts, although there's some there, but not, like, you know, you think of New York Chinatown, San Francisco Chinatown, L.A. Chinatown, right? You don't think of, like, you know, South Florida, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly in the early to mid-90s, you have one of the most legitimate and, you know, famous masters of Choi Lei Phut teaching there, right? And unfortunately, I think a year or maybe a year and a half later, Lei Kunhong passed away suddenly. He had, I believe he had a heart defect and he just passed away. And his younger brother, Lei Xiuhong from Hong Kong, came and took over for his brother.
Took over to school.
So, and which is pretty amazing, right? I mean, like, you know, the school had already been started. He already had a number of students and then the younger brother comes and starts teaching and takes over. And Lei Xiuhong doesn't really speak a lot of English. Even now, he speaks some English, but, like, he basically just came as a Hong Kong Chinese Choi Lei Phut master and just started teaching in his brother's place, right? So, I mean, I have a lot of respect for him for doing that. And so I had the chance to meet Lei Xiuhong a few years ago, and, like, when I'm in Florida, if I have time, I'll go and I'll see him, I'll visit his school.
Chop it with him.
And
chop
what's great up. Is that, you know, he tells me, like, oh, when he was younger, he met Yip Man. Because, you know, like, his older brother was very famous, right?
Yeah.
So they would go to all these martial art banquets in Hong Kong, and he was younger. And he said they went to some banquet, Yip Man was there, and he met Yip Man and all this stuff. So, like, so he's been around for a long time, and he even gave me some, he gave me, like, a book that was his brother's, which was, like, a huge honor for me, like, this magazine from the Hong Kong Martial Art Association that he gave to me, and it was, like, it was a very big deal. So absolutely respect him. And he told me on one of the times when we met, because Southern Mantis is a hard style of kung fu. You know, nowadays people always talk about internal and all this kind of stuff, and people, you know, pretend like, oh, external styles are not as sophisticated or whatever, but there are some real hard styles of kung fu that are very, very intelligent. And in my opinion, Southern Mantis is one of the most intelligent hard styles of kung fu, but it is hard. I mean, the practice is very strenuous. And Lei Xiuhong told me that when he was younger, he saw a fight between someone, I don't know who it was, and someone who did Southern Mantis. And he just said the Southern Mantis guy just went, bam, and did one short movement and just blew the other guy away. And he said it was so mind-blowing when he saw that. And he said that the Southern Mantis, they're very extreme. He said those guys are very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, because it's kind of rare in Chinese martial arts that an established Kung Fu master will so openly praise another style. Like it was pretty open the way he said it. And then so between like the Wan Kam Leung connection and then what Lei Xiuhong told me, I thought maybe I should like check this out. So I went to Hong Kong on one of my trips in 2015. It was the one where I went with Ethan.
Yeah.
And I met Sifu Lei Tin Loi. Lei Tin Loi is one of the best, in my opinion, Zhao Ga Mantis masters in Hong Kong. He's a retired police officer. He's a no-nonsense guy. And I had to kind of like, there was some emailing back and forth because he's like, oh, you're a Wing Chun guy. Like, he's very traditional. Like, they don't really want to teach people. Like, and for me, I'm not looking to become like a Southern Mantis guy or something like that. I mean, I already have an established Wing Chun school. I want to learn. But when I learn something, I want to learn from the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, like whether it's Wing Chun, you know, like have the chance to learn from Sifu Leung Teng directly and learn from Sifu Kanchbek and like in the WT world and Sifu Carson Lau and Elman Leung and Sifu Cheng Chun Fun when I was in Hong Kong and like learn from the best guys, right? Like, which is why it's funny. Sometimes some of our European audience are like, hey, have you trained with Sifu Hans Schroeder, blah, 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 some German guy? It's like, dude.
Yeah.
First of all, I trained in Germany at the castle for 3 years with the best guys, right? And then I went and learned from all the Hong Kong guys. You're a Sihang in the middle of Buxtehude, Germany. I'm sure he's a big deal for you, but it's like, this is not my path, right? I'm a total snob when it comes to this stuff. Even when I did boxing down in Mendez Gym, like I got my boxing trainer that I trained with for 6 months was a Golden Gloves boxer from the Dominican Republic, right?
Yeah, okay.
And I trained with him. I just want to learn from the best dudes, right? So Lei Tin Loi is like literally one of the best dudes in Southern Mantis. And I was in Hong Kong. That trip, I think, was 3 weeks. I went to his classes. I think his classes were twice a week. His classes were over 2 hours long. Very intense, old school, just like it's almost out of a kung fu movie. It's like torturous. But I would do private lessons with him before. So I was training with Lei Tin Loi 3 hours every night. And I did that a few times a week. So
I remember this.
Yeah. Ethan was there.
Trip.
And like, I had a bad cough, but I kept training. And Lei Tin Loi was, you know, and not to pat myself on the back, but he was kind of blown away that I was like, I had this nasty cough, but I kept training and he kept trying to push me back and I kept pushing forward. And he was like, he was impressed, but it's not like I'm some amazing dude. I'm just extremely, bullish when I want to do something. It's like, if I want to learn this, I'm gonna push through and do it. And I learned the whole first form, and I learned the Tai Sao, their partner exercises. I trained with those. It was amazing, and I learned so much. And it redefined a lot about how I think about tendon strength training and explosive power and ways to train things differently. And so, you know, I'm not going to say like I, you know, really did Southern Mantis for any period of time, but for the time that I did it with one of the best guys, and I did it with my whole heart. I lost so much weight in those weeks training with him. Like, I was like skin, I was like skin and bones. I
looked back looking like my Sihang.
I came
Ethan.
Looking like Ethan, right? But because it was crazy.
Like twins.
Yeah, it was crazy. But I loved every minute of it, and I learned a lot. It taught me a lot about power transfer and power training. I wouldn't say it changed a lot about the fighting concept that I use, right? It made me see a couple little things we do in Wing Chun that I could do a little bit better with a couple little basic ideas that I learned from him. But I didn't like restructure how I do Wing Chun because of it. But I restructured certain things about how I train and how I present certain movements because I got a few clues on some things and it opened my eyes to other styles of Kung Fu, which are, you know, quite practical and quite intelligent.
Man.
Yeah.
Man, what a journey.
Yeah.
What a journey you've had.
Lei Tin Loi is a total badass.
Lei Tin Loi.
Lei Tin Loi, Sifu Lei Tin Loi is maybe a little taller. He's around my height, but he's a little skinnier.
Mm-hmm.
But I have, pound for pound, never met anyone who was stronger than he was.
Is this the book you showed me? He came back with a book.
I think he's in that book, yeah.
Yeah, it was a book, and he was just in.
No. That might have been another one. There are a lot of strong dudes there that from those styles. Hakka styles, you got a lot of strong dudes in there. But Lei Tin Loi, if you saw him walking down the street, you Sifu Li Jianlui is the most unassuming. No, he's the most unassuming person. He's got a very stern look on his face. He's very no nonsense, very classic, cut from that old mold of what a Sifu is, like very no nonsense. Cracks a smile only when absolutely necessary. But I never met anyone, and mind you, I've trained with a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys. Pound for pound, I've never met anyone stronger than Li Jianlui. When he puts his hands on you and he grips, it's like just, it's like crushing an orange. Like, and he does it, and you see he's not using all of his strength. And you just go, Jesus Christ.
The handshake.
Yeah, it was funny because he told me, like, they did this type of training where they put their fingers on a table and they put an egg underneath, right?
Oh.
And you extend your arms and you have someone stand on your arms. So, of course, you have to basically suspend their weight on your fingers. And if your fingers buckle, you crush the egg, right? And then I remember I was having a tantat with him at a place right next to where Grandmaster Yip Man's home was on Tong Choi Street.
Oh, okay.
There's a little, I might have even taken you there. There's a little cha san tang, a little diner where they specialize in tantat.
And so it's right, about right under his crib, the yes. McDonald's, the fake McDonald's.
No, not a fake McDonald's. They have the special dantat there, which is like really good. So after training, we would go there and we would eat and we would talk. Yeah, we went there. And he goes like, oh, do you know the demonstration where, you know, we put the fingers there and there's the egg and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I said, yeah, that's amazing. He goes, not so good. He's like, my Sifu could do it with three fingers. And he's like,
three fingers?
Yeah. So it's like the new, he's almost like the new generation. He's like, the new generation is not that good.
Can't hang.
And he's just like, well, oh my God.
He was doing it like this.
Yeah.
Come on,
and he was kind of like, you know, yeah, the new generation, we're not worthy. And he's like, look at this guy. And he's definitely one of the last of that generation. They will never be Kung Fu masters of his caliber again.
Damn.
Li Jianlui, all those old school guys.
Damn it.
That's the end of it really for that generation in Hong Kong. Like that's the last of those guys.
Damn it. Whew. Gotta preserve the art, people.
Yo.
Preserve. All right. Next up, man. All right, we got Axel Stone.
That's a name I give cops when, you know, they're trying to kick me out from skateboarding when I was a kid. What's your name? Axel Stone? I used to say it was Axel because it's like close to Alex. It was an easy fake name to remember.
Yeah.
Or I would tell them I was Brian Dennehy, who's actually an actor. But no one. So because I used to skateboard when I was a teenager, right? And you get kicked out all the security guards. They get out of here. Right? Sometimes they take your name down or whatever. And I was either Axel something.
Mm-hmm.
Or I was Brian Dennehy, who was an actor.
Out your head right
yeah.
There.
But the funny thing is, like, no one ever knew who Brian Dennehy was. And I'm like, the dude's an actor. Like, no one ever knew. I was always Brian Dennehy or Axel something, right? those are my fake names.
Axel.
Skateboard punk.
Oh, yes. Axel Richter. All right, Axel Stone. What are your thoughts on Bruce Lee's level of skill at the time of Enter the Dragon?
I don't know. I don't know, because what do we know from Bruce Lee from the time of Enter the Dragon? It's different from like in the earlier period where he's teaching martial arts like in Los Angeles, and you have a lot of stories from his students in terms of like sparring with him and what he was teaching and what he was doing and all, this guy tried this and Bruce did this against that. You have a lot of stories about what Bruce was doing from a martial arts perspective when he was in Los Angeles. And then you have some footage of him training in his backyard. Mind you, according to John Little, a lot of that backyard footage where Bruce is like kicking the bag and doing all that kind of stuff, that was when he was getting off the back injury. Because some people say, oh, some of his kicks didn't really look that clean or whatever. Like, look, if I just put a video camera in my backyard and I had a heavy bag out there and I'm just mucking around with my students and you just let the camera roll, you know, every rep I'm doing is not like the cleanest rep. You're just kind of mucking around and doing stuff. It's like, you know, you nowadays when you put a video on YouTube or you put a video on Instagram, you just put the highlights of that stuff, right? And so you're looking at a lot of just raw footage of him just kind of moving around and working, and it's very informal. But from what I understood, a lot of that was when he was coming back from his back injury. So he's working on those kicks and he's trying to get back into moving. And this is like in the same year or very close to the time that he's going to go and do Big Boss. So he's like trying to really get back into shape. But we have stories about Bruce's martial exploits and prowess up to that point.
Okay.
When he comes to Hong Kong, he's essentially shooting movies. So what do we know about Bruce's martial arts stuff in Hong Kong? Well, we only know that he was shooting films. We know about his training schedule a little bit because he talked about training 2 hours a day. And we know that in late 72, he got the Marcy machine. And, like, you know, we know some stories of, you know, Bolo coming over and him showing this punch and doing this thing here or whatever. But the problem is that you don't have, like, footage of Bruce hitting a heavy bag
in Hong Kong.
Okay. You know, you don't have footage of Bruce doing sparring in the backyard with those guys or whatever. So what can we possibly know about Bruce's martial arts skills? I mean, we can make an assumption that he's getting better. He's training. He's still...
Is there any footage of him at Cumberland Lane?
Cumberland Road?
Cumberland Road Lane.
No, it's not Lane Cumberland Road. Road, no.
Cumberland
from what? No, I mean, we have photos. There are lots of photos. I don't know if there's actual footage. Most of the footage that was shot at the Cumberland Road home was shot by Raymond Chow after Bruce Lee died around the time of the funeral. He shot all that stuff. So I don't know.
It's Whack Arnold's.
Yeah, it's kind of Whack Arnold. So the problem is, like, I can speculate, but what am I going by, right? Him doing choreography in Enter the Dragon doesn't speak to his martial, you know, his martial development since we last saw him teaching people, all right? Because teaching Jeet Kune Do and, you know, teaching his students how to spar and move, and so that was not his main concern from end of 71 until the end of his life.
Mm.
So he was in a totally different mode. So physically, he was probably stronger. We can assume, I mean, of course, there's the back injury, there's the drug issue, stuff like that, but we can assume he's, you know, he's still fit, he's still practicing everything, he's definitely maintained his skill, but what can we say? We have nothing to go on, right?
Man. Ooh, well. All right. Next up, we got The Bobinator.
The Bobinator. Wow.
Of all the kung fu movies you've seen that has Wing Chun, which one of them do you feel best showcases the art itself, including its strengths and weaknesses?
Well, I'm always partial to Prodigal Son. For me, that is the gold standard of Wing Chun films. And I know the final fight scene with Yuen Biu, he doesn't do the best Wing Chun in the final fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that to a certain degree, the first Ip Man movie with Donnie Yen is a lot better in terms of putting what looks more like orthodox Wing Chun into choreography, right? But I still want to say it's Prodigal Son, because basically, in Prodigal Son, the, you know, Yuen Biu, who plays Leung Jan, who's an actual historical character in Wing Chun, he learns from two teachers, which is, from what we understand, historically correct. Now, exactly how and what he learned, you know, Leung Jan, who's Ip Man Si Gong, learned from Wong Hua Bo, all right, and he learned from Leung Yi Tai, supposedly, all right? That's one of the 80 stories, all right? Or so, and if someone's going to say, well, actually, he only learned from Wong Hua Bo and Leung Yi Tai, okay, whatever, because you're there, you know, okay? Shut up. So it's because the thing is, when you listen to all these historical...
I love your troll impersonation.
Well, you know what it is? It's the problem is that we don't really know, but different lineages sometimes have a different spin.
I was there, though.
But different lineages...
Dreisen knows.
Yeah. Different lineages have a different spin on it. And the problem is, most people will tell you the one that's right is the one their Sifu told them. But the reason it's right is because their Sifu told them.
You got to trust your Sifu, though.
Yeah, but the thing is, their Sifu's a swell guy, so of course they believe everything that their Sifu says. And their Sifu is not necessarily misleading them or lying to them. Their Sifu is just telling them what they know or what they remember or what they think they know. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that because people are very loyal to their lineage or whatever, they're going to say, no, you're wrong. Actually, so-and-so. It's like, well, how do you know that? My Sifu told me. How does your Sifu know that? All right? Someone told him. Okay. If you have a room with five people and I tell you something and whisper something into your ear, you whisper it to the next person. It's the game of telephone, right?
Man.
within five people in the same room, I whisper something to you, and by the time that gets to the fourth person, it's not the same thing. That is live time, right now, in the same room with people who know each other.
Yeah.
Now, you want to tell me that your 89th hand story, and that's probably being very conservative, about exactly what the history of Wing Chun is, by the time it gets to your lips, all right, is 100% accurate because the last person who told you was your Sifu. STFU, all right? Hard STFU.
Hard.
Okay, all right?
Brolic.
I'm going to listen to that. I'm going to say, you shut the front door,
yeah,
all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I don't want to listen to that, all right? So we're
STFU
talking
STFU is shut the front door?
I thought it was shut the French toast.
Cut the GTF out of here.
OMG. So anyway, so I'm not going to argue with that stuff because you're arguing with people who also don't know, but they're so into it because their Sifu told them. All right, fine. And your Sifu's right. All right. Okay, whatever. So anyway, the Leung Chan character learns from two Sifus, right? From Leung Yi Tai in the film played by the late, great Lam Cheng Ying, and Wong Wah Bo played by the magnificent Sammo Hung. And so in the movie, you know, he learns the standard Wing Chun, the mid-range or let's say close-range Wing Chun from Leung Yi Tai. But Sammo Hung, being a big guy, he teaches Leung Chan's character two things, all right? One, you also need to be able to fight and deal with stuff at long range, like someone trying to kick you and how to deal with that kind of stuff. And also, you have to not worry about always following the rules, right? Because there's one moment where Leung Chan kind of ties up or either Sammo ties up Leung Chan or Leung Chan ties up Sammo's character, Wong Wah Bo, and Sammo gives him a headbutt.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, ah! And he goes, Sifu, is this Wing Chun? And he goes, who cares as long as I win?
Yeah.
All right?
Right.
And that's such a great line, right? And then so he was working on some of the limitations of what, Yun Biu's Leung Chan had learned from his first teacher. So then he's able to synthesize both of them. And so for me, Prodigal Son is the gold standard of Wing Chun films. Because of the Yip Man movies, they might have got a little tighter in certain, especially Yip Man 1, not so much the other ones. And Yip Man, The Final Fight, a lot more accurate in terms of like the Wing Chun choreography. But those are essentially films about Yip Man, not so much about the style of Wing Chun. So that's why I left them a little out of
What about the Wing Chun movie that we don't know about, that you know about?
What do you mean?
I don't know. There's got to be one movie that you know of that a lot of people don't know about. It's not that mainstream.
Formidable Lady of Shaolin. It's a movie in the late 70s or early 80s.
Okay.
And it tells the story of Yin Wing Chun. But, I mean, a lot of kung fu heads know that
That's
movie.
That's the name of the movie.
Yeah. Hmm. Formidable Lady from Shaolin. And it's about Yin Wing Chun.
Okay. And we'll check that out.
And Leung Teng was the choreographer.
Oh.
So it I'm had the Wing Chun is very, you know, Leung Teng-ish, right?
and from the 80s, you said?
It's either late 70s, early 80s. Okay. But it's an old, like, period piece style kung fu movie, right? And yeah, a lot of people know about that one. Interesting, there's a movie called Descendant of Wing Chun, which is not a great Wing Chun movie.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, it was going to star William Chung. And
what?
Yeah, so when you can even find online, you can find some
what?
Yeah, so I mean, William Chung was obviously not an actor, but famous obviously for being a student of Yip Man. He was hired to be in this film, and the problem was that he got that you can even see they have
would
some
pay to go back into time. Where's Dryzen?
Yeah,
give it that
exactly. So
that time machine action, get him in there.
So you can see some photos of William Chung in costume, and he like for the film. But William Chung got fired after 1 week. And there are a few stories about why he got fired.
Yeah. Why?
One, he wasn't able to do any of the action choreography.
It's always coming down to choreography, learning the choreography.
Well, you know what it is, and this is a perennial issue, and I think people who are don't follow this stuff maybe don't realize, because this, the, like, sometimes I'm on Instagram, people are like, who would win in a fight, you know, Jet Li or, you know, Jackie Chan or something like that. And it's like, oh, you poor bastard. You think these guys are like fighters, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's not to say that it's not to say that Jackie Chan couldn't scrap if he had to. I mean, the guy's very physical, but the problem is like, oh, you don't know the difference between like movie stuff and real stuff, right? And the fact that, you know, a lot of the best guys on in movie choreography are not necessarily like the guys who are there hitting the bag and, you know, working their, you know, check left hook and that kind of stuff. It's like people confuse this stuff all the time because they're not really into it. Real fighters, like people from like a professional fighting background, are often god-awful in choreography, because movie choreography is so different from fighting in the ring or whatever, because fighting in the ring, it's all about, you know, creating the most damage or winning on points or whatever the game is. Choreography is about doing something that looks impressive really cool to the audience. Right. And part of that is selling shots. You know, like what makes someone look really good is how his partner sells the shot. You know, if I fire a punch across your face and the camera's in the right angle and that goes across your face and you sell it with a wicked head snap, it makes me look awesome.
Yeah.
But if I go like this and you have no reaction, it looks like garbage, the same punch. It
brings me back to Rocky III with Mr. T. I love that fight.
Yeah, yeah.
They absolutely were selling it.
Yeah, totally. Oh,
they were selling it.
So, but you need like, you need two to tango. Mm-hmm. And also you need to know how to control your force. And this is not something that most professional fighters have spent any time doing. And so one story was William Cheung was wholly incapable of doing the choreography. The choreographer was coming in saying, you got to do this and you got to do that. And he was very bad at it. Another story was that because William Cheung has his own take on the history of Wing Chun, that he was trying to get elements of the story rewritten to fit his version of Wing Chun history, and that was kind of butting heads because they're like, yo, we just hired you to be the actor, you're not the writer or whatever. Right. But anyway, he was fired after a week, and then he was replaced by another actor, and then they finished the film. But it's not a great Wing Chun movie either way. But you can, if you look online, actually find William Cheung in costume that they took some test shots where he's got like, you know, he's got like the long queue hair, and I think he's wearing a brown Tong Chong, but the film was never to be with him at least. Yeah, man,
that is a great question, Bobinator. Let's move right along. Adolfo Gonzalez.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Fun questions.
All right.
If Yip Man were alive today, what car do you think he would drive, assuming money is not an issue?
Well, that's a weird question, because having a car in Hong Kong is like having a car in New York. It's way more of a burden than it is a convenience.
Didn't he have a car in Hong Kong?
No. Most people, especially at that time, don't have cars. Only the ultra wealthy would own a car. Maybe Tang Sang would have a car.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What kind of car did Tang Sang drive?
I don't know, but I can't imagine that he wasn't driving a Mercedes or something like that.
White car with red interior?
Red leather interior.
Leather interior.
No, that's a really good question. Man. I'll have to see if I can maybe ask Philip Chan or someone like that a question like that. No, I'm sure. I mean, first of all, Tang Sang lived. He had a home in Kowloon Tong, which is where Bruce Lee's home was, that area, which is a wealthy area.
Those are not next door.
Those are not apartments. Those are actual freestanding homes, which in Hong Kong, it's like in New York. Most people live in apartment buildings. But like if you have a single house where it's just you,
you got to go New somewhere York, else.
Yeah. No, I mean, but like sometimes you go to Queens and like you'll see a single and someone owns that. You go like the dude's doing well for themselves.
Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn.
Yeah. Something like that. Right.
All the dope houses. Over there.
So Tang Sang owned a home in Kowloon Tong and also in Fanlang. So I'm pretty sure he probably had a car as well.
Two baller cribs. He never gave Yip Man a car?
Well, Yip Man may not have been able to drive. You know, right, there's these like weird people who don't go for their driver's license until they're like really crusty ass old.
And, hey, I hate those guys.
Yeah. Because they wasted so many years where they could have been getting good at driving. And then it's like trying to teach an old dog new tricks.
Is that so?
Yeah, like some old bastard that goes to driving school when he's like in his 40s.
What?
And then does his license. Like,
what?
Like life advice. Never get in the car with that guy.
Oh, yeah, and you know the worst thing about those kind of guys is then they make really bad choices about cars they buy, like buying a Lexus or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the problem. You're late in life license, and then you're like, what kind of car do I need to get? Let me get a Lexus. All right.
The LILs, yeah. Late in life.
Yeah. In life. You know what a Lexus is called in Japan?
Toyota.
It's called a Toyota because that's what it is. All right. And Toyotas are great cars. All right. So they should just call it what it is.
Call it what it is.
A Toyota. All right.
I call it as I see it.
Yeah. So anyway, what car would you manage? I don't think he would even drive.
I don't think so.
In Hong Kong. Look, he lived in Tong Choi Street. You remember where he was? Between a bus and the train, why do you need a car in Hong Kong? You really don't need a car in Hong Kong unless you live maybe in the new territories or something like that. Even today, the public transportation in Hong Kong is so killing.
Yeah, it is really
so killing. You don't need a car.
So you don't think he'll have a car?
No.
Not even for fun purposes.
No. It's just not his style. It's not his style. No. Wow. This is an old school.
He's getting driven around.
Yeah.
That's more his style.
Yeah, maybe.
Come pick me up. You want to hang out with me.
Right.
You want to go do dim sum, you got to come pick me up.
Right.
Wow. Damn. Sorry, Adolfo. I wanted to know the answer to this one. Mm-hmm. All right. Another, this is Adolfo still. He has like a more of a 2-3-parter.
Okay.
Do you think that Bruce Lee or David Carradine... yes, I spelled the name wrong. Too lazy to look it up. Caused... the Kung Fu frenzy in the 70s, 80s, or 90s? Bruce Lee or David Carradine? Who caused the Kung Fu frenzy? The frenzy?
Neither.
David Carradine?
Neither. All right.
David Carradine caused it.
Neither. The first Kung Fu movie to come to the States was Five Fingers of Death with Lo Lee. Preceded the Bruce Lee films. That started showing... yeah. In the theaters in New York City.
Yeah.
That was the movie that made people go, what?
Oh, yeah?
And then very shortly after that, Bruce Lee came. So in terms of watching Kung Fu movies.
Ooh.
No,
five
man.
Five Fingers. Yeah, yeah. No,
Five Fingers of Death.
That.
Lo Lee. Lo Lee is the OG. When it comes to, especially here in New York, right? And then that's what shot it off, right? You have to imagine that like the Kung Fu TV series was just something that ran slightly after that came out. And then Bruce Lee hit, and then who the hell cares about David Carradine? Next question. Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners. Are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for KFG fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner. Fill out your email and password and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to all the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this cool guy on the cover. That's me for those of you listening to us on audio. My Kung Fu Genius column is also in all the new issues, as if you needed another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And now back to me.
All right, next part. How do you feel about when people say it Kung Fu or Gong Fu?
Oh, the two different spellings? Oh, I'm kind of ambivalent on that. You know, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to Chinese and Cantonese and the correct pronunciations and stuff like that. But when it comes to that, I also feel that you need to speak like you need to say certain things the way everyone else says it. Otherwise, you just sound kind of off, or you sound like a bit of a tryhard.
Mm.
So, not to blame the Brits, but I'm going to blame the Brits.
Yeah.
So
blame it on the Brits.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the problem is, as I've discussed multiple times on this podcast, there's no standard romanization for Cantonese into, you know, our alphabet, the Latin alphabet or whatever. And so, you know, when you see something like beauty, that's the second form. Okay, so how do you write that in English? Okay, or how do you write that in the Latin alphabet, right? Well, B-I-U, B-E-W, you know, I mean, there's like, but the thing is, either one of those could give you a correct approximation, right? T, Z-I, J-I, T-Z-E, T-Z-I, that's already the problem because there's no standard way of writing. I mean, look at Wing Chun and all of its myriad spellings, right? Yeah. And the main reason why you didn't see a lot of W-I-N-G-C-H-U-N, which is, for all intents and purposes, the most commonly accepted spelling, is because the acronym WC means toilet. Okay, so you go to Europe And when you see the toilet, it's a WC. It's for water closet, right? Same in Hong Kong, which was a British colony. You still see WC as the toilet there, right? So in Hong Kong, they never wanted to spell Wing Chun, W-I-N-G-C-H-U-N, because the acronym would be WC, which literally means toilet.
Is that why Leng Ting changed it up?
No. The first spelling that they came up with was V-I-N-G-T-S-U-N when they had to form the Wing Chun Athletic Association in 1966. In Hong Kong, the British government, facing some pressure from certain groups, because a lot of martial arts schools had triad connections. And so as a result, they wanted to out these people and out these elements. So what did they do? Around 1966, they made a law that all martial arts schools have to officially register. Because until then, Kung Fu schools, like Yip Man didn't form an LLC or an S Corp in the 50s. You know what I mean? What was he doing? He was teaching at the restaurant uni. He was collecting fees and he just collegi pocketed that money.
Under the table, boy.
All right. This wasn't like a company. He didn't have like the Wing Chun Limited Company. Mm. At that time, he's just taking money, right? And then he reports whatever he wants to report. Well, by 65, 66, the Hong Kong government changed the law, said if you're a martial arts school, you have to formally register as an association, which means you have to register as a business, okay? Because what they wanted to do is they wanted to kind of know who's teaching and they wanted to have the ability to kind of have a little transparency, partially because of all the triad connections with Chinese martial arts. So that was why in 65, 66, they formed what's known as the Wing Chun Athletic Association. This was actually a requirement because of Hong Kong law, all right? So that was then the first time they had to actually figure out, because with the Hong Kong government, you know, with Hong Kong being a British colony, they had to have a spelling in the Latin alphabet for all the Chinese stuff. So basically that's when they had to decide, okay, boys and girls, how are we actually going to spell Wing Chun? Because until then, the only people who practiced Wing Chun were Chinese. So how you spelt it using the alphabet was irrelevant because it's just the two Chinese characters for everyone. Wing Chun, you speak Chinese, you write Wing Chun. Doesn't matter how do you write that? Who cares? They're not teaching foreigners. But now that they had to officially register, they had to come up with a spelling. So the WC one was a non-starter. But the word Chun, which means springtime, is not Chun the way most like Americans say Wing Chun. It's totally wrong. All right. The CH in Cantonese is a lot sharper. It's not cha. The mouth is more closed. All right. And it's not un, it's un, chun, Wing Chun, Wing Chun. All right. It's shorter. And so that's why the TS, because sometimes when you combine in certain phonetic systems, TS, it makes it it's not T-sun, all right? It's because you're supposed to combine the T and the S together, not say them independently of each other.
Okay.
So it's chun, chun, see, here
damn,
the T.
This whole time I've chun, been calling all right? it Wing Sun.
Yeah,
wing
everyone's sun. Saying Wing Sun, right?
It's like there was a silent T.
What's the difference between Wing Chun and Wing T-sun? And I go, I don't know. And I just walk away, all right?
So, Wing to Sun.
Wing to Sun. I don't know. I've never heard of Wing to Sun before. All right? Wing Chun. The problem is someone, and it could be Yip. So Yip Man purportedly studied English when he went to university at St. Stephen's College. But for the life of me, you never really hear any stories about Yip Man actually speaking English. So he might have studied it and not really been able to speak it, or his English might not have been good. Siva Leng Ting told me some funny story about Yip Man trying to speak English saying something on a license plate. But, like, he made a mistake, and, like, he tried to be funny, and it wasn't funny because, like, he couldn't really speak English that well. So like, the only one story I have about Yip Man kind of saying something in English was through Leung Ting. He told me the story that there was some acronym on a license plate, and then Yip Man looked at it and wanted to say something funny about it in English, but actually
He
botched it, right? And they were all kind of like, you know, he's Yip Man. What are you going to say, right? So we don't know if this is Yip Man's mistake or someone who advised him on how to spell wing, because wing is pretty obviously W-I-N-G, all right? Wing, right? But someone, whether it was Yip Man or whatever, put the thing in his ear that V is the W sound.
Mm.
So he spelled it V-I-N-G. Now, I've later heard that the reason why they use the V-I-N-G spellings, because, well, you know, Cantonese is tonal, and there are all these subtleties about the tone. That, okay, I'm going to tell you, Dre, is bullshit, okay? Because the big controversy about Cantonese tones, there are really only six tones in Cantonese. Some say there's seven.
Only six,
yeah, which is already a lot, right? Because there's like a high-level tone and a high-falling tone, and to the Cantonese ear, they cannot discern the difference. So most modern Cantonese books do not make a difference between the high tone and the high falling tone. It's the same. So it went from seven to six. Ah. But like the linguistic experts, like the nerds in the universities, say that there are nine tones in Cantonese. But you know why that's bullshit? Because it doesn't matter if they say they're nine tones. It matters what do Cantonese people actually say and do and speak. My wife grew up in Hong Kong, educated in Hong Kong, graduated University of Hong Kong as a lawyer, very high level, all right? I go, name all the tones to me. Tell me all the nine tones. And she looks at me like I'm a space. She can't do that, all right? They're only six, okay? Only six. Okay. So some people clearly seeing that V-I-N-G is totally erroneous. It's not Weng. You have to know that, because if anyone looks at that, you say Ving. It's V, all right? But in Cantonese, it's Weng, Weng. It's a low-level tone. It's six tone, Weng. It's not Ving. There is no V sound in all of Cantonese phonetics. Wow. You have never heard someone in Chinese say, Lai ho va, va. You never hear va, va. There's no V in Cantonese. Right. It does not exist.
That's funny.
All right? There's no V in Cantonese. It's not there, all right? So, because people feel embarrassed about this stuff, some people created some bullshit explanation about, well, you poor dumb Westerners don't understand about all the subtleties of Cantonese and all the tones. And so actually it is correct that it's V-I-N-G. No, it's not. It's bullshit. It's a mistake. And so you have to know that V-I-N-G, you got to pronounce that wing. All right, you have to know that, because by no phonetic standard is that correct. All right, if anything, V in any alternate phonetics, like in German, sounds more like an F, but not like a W. That's not even a stretch. That's just nonsense. All right, wow. So that's where that spelling came in. So anyway, I totally forgot how and why we got on
Kung
that.
Kung Fu, Gong Fu.
Ah, yes, yeah. There we go. Okay, so in Cantonese, the term of Kung Fu should be pronounced Kung Fu, Kung, it's a G, Kung Fu. But the Brits, in their kind of nonsensical way of transliterating stuff, write that as a K, all right? And so the K-U-N-G is a Britishism from the colonial times in Hong Kong. And it's stupid. But most older generation Hong Kong Chinese, they write anything that starts with a G, they write with a K. So Sivo Leung Ting is my Si Gong, all right? Si Gong, 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 G. Every time he wrote an email to me, he wrote Si Gong, K-U-N-G, because that's old school British. So the K thing is actually a Britishism, all right? And the problem with that, all right, besides the fact that it's literally a G sound, not a K sound, so it's already inaccurate, is that Cantonese also has the K sound. So the problem is, if you're going...
That's not confusing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So if you have like Kong, Kong, K-U-N-G, it could mean like poor, all right? But Gong, Gong, Gong is a G. These are two different sounds. But if you ask a Hong Kong Chinese person to transliterate both of them, they would transliterate both of them as K-U-N-G. Kong and Gong, they would just K-U-N-G. So that's why it's unbelievably inaccurate, okay? Because so if Cantonese did not have a K sound and only had a G sound and they decided to use K, but you know it's pronounced like a G, it would be more acceptable. But Cantonese has both, has words that start with K and words that start with G, and they all write it as a K. So that is a problem. So the thing is that Kung Fu, K-U-N-G, is the most commonly accepted spelling, so I use that one. Because I feel that when people go Kung Fu, oh, Bruce Lee spelled it G-U-N-G, right, ever, it's more phonetically accurate. But honestly, it comes off as being a bit try-hard. It's like someone writes like, oh, I practice Kung Fu. And by the way, if you see it spelled G-O-N-G-F-U, All right? That's the Mandarin pronunciation, which is Gong.
That's when you tell them F-U.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Right? But the O-N-G, that is the Mandarin pronunciation. It's not Gong in Mandarin, it's Gong, right? But in Cantonese, it's Gong with a U, right? Mm. And I always find it kind of funny, people are like, I teach Kung Fu, right? Or Jun Fan Kung Fu, or I teach this style of Kung Fu. And I go, oh, you're a Cantonese phoneticist? All right. Tell me how you say Sifu.
Yeah.
I want to hear how you pronounce that. Oh, that's unbelievably inaccurate. But on the Kung Fu, you're all like hot and bothered about that with the G, right? Yeah. So I'm like, unless you're going to do that with everything, calm down, buddy. Take it easy. All right. All right. Let's go to the next one.
In past episodes, you've mentioned Hong Kyun as another style of Kung Fu you dabbled in. Would it be possible to get the Sifu you mentioned to get on the show and ask him questions live? Sorry, I forgot his name, but I know you had a clip of him drinking coffee and hitting the wooden dummy. You know who he's referring to?
It must be Max Sifu, of course.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, of course he was talking about Max Sifu. Well, I actually did that. If you go to realeast.com, R-E-E-L-E-A-S-T, mm-hmm. which is Bay Logan's site, we actually did a Zoom call or a Zoom...
Is it a KFG episode?
No, it's not a KFG episode. Okay. Last year we did a combined Hong Kun and Wing Chun comparison.
It's up on YouTube.
No, it's not up on YouTube. It's at realeast.com.
Ah.
And I think you were literally here when we recorded that. Jesus Christ, Dre.
Word.
I think you were even my partner when I did that. My God.
Are you lying? I wasn't here.
You weren't here?
No, it might have been Mikey Diesel. Weed,
I don't know it about been that.
Mikey Diesel.
No, it's it definitely not Mikey Diesel.
It might have been.
So anyway, we did like a, he would show, I would explain something about Wing Chun and then demonstrate something. He would explain something about Hong Kun and demonstrate it. And so we actually did that already. You can actually purchase that at realeast.com. Yep. Max Sifu is a very good friend. If he wants to come on the podcast, I'm more than happy to do that. But I wouldn't say that I really dabbled in Hong Kun. I mean, I've picked his brain ad nauseum on things, and he's shown me a couple things, but I wouldn't say like to say that I've dabbled in Hong Kun is a bit of a stretch.
Okay. All right, lastly, what if monks never taught other people kung fu? I feel it would be a tremendous loss to us who study and appreciate it now.
Yeah, I don't really believe most kung fu comes from monks. I believe some of it did. Some monks knew kung fu and taught laymen. But this trope that kung fu comes from...
It's just a trope.
From this is bullshit. This is bullshit. Get out of here with that nonsense. All right, next one. All right. Look, Chinese martial arts predate the Shaolin Temple.
Yeah.
All right. That's already the mic drop on this thing that all martial arts come from Shaolin. You can find in archaeological records weapons that are attributed as Shaolin weapons that predate Buddhism. Not even just the Shaolin Temple, but Buddhism itself. China is such a big country, all right, that has a huge border that borders all sorts of different countries, all right? And so they have constantly had to defend their borders against invaders. So fighting on horseback with weapons and one-to-one, these are things that they've been doing since the beginning of time. You have to imagine that something like this has to be true for the Shaolin Temple story to be real. For hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, all right? China's being invaded by all these foreigners, but they don't know.
Especially the Brits.
Yeah, but they don't know how to do anything. All right, they don't know how to fight. They go, oh, I don't know. I guess they're gonna come in. I don't know. We don't know anything. Then finally, Buddhism is developed, which is this peaceful martial art. And a Buddhist monk named Damo goes to China.
Oh no!
All right, and teaches these Shaolin monks who are starting to learn Buddhism how to breathe better because they're falling asleep during meditation. And through these breathing techniques...
This is the lore.
And through these breathing techniques, peaceful Buddhist monks developed fighting. And for the first time in the long history of China, peaceful Buddhist monks were the ones that introduced, oh, you know what? You can stab an MF-er with a sword. I never knew you could do that. You know what else? You can take your fist and ram it in someone's face. Thank you, Buddha. Until this moment in history, we had no idea that we could actually use physical violence against someone else.
Yo.
You have to believe some version of that in order to think that Chinese martial arts came from the Shaolin Temple. Nonsense. Next question.
I love it. All right. Next up, we got Alan Horton, AIA.
That's what's up. I've heard of that guy.
You know that guy?
Yeah.
All right. Question. Do you believe there's a relationship between Bruce Lee's drug use and pain associated with his back injury? Which must have made his goals seem impossible to achieve at times.
That's good. I mean, for sure. But of course, when you talk about drug use, what drugs are we talking about? Because, you know, Bruce was taking pretty heavy pain medication. He had injections, you know, the cortisone injections, which is not like a drug thing, but it's to alleviate the inflammation and all that kind of stuff. And of course, Tom Bleeker, in his famous book, totally confused corticosteroids with anabolic steroids in the funniest way, where you go like, oh my God. Like, you ever notice someone is arguing something with you and they're totally wrong to begin with, but they keep arguing?
Oh yeah.
And you just like, at some point you're not invested anymore and you just want to say in your best ASMR style voice, corticosteroids are not anabolic steroids. It's not the same thing. Genius. You can keep talking, but that will not change that fact. So you just kind of go like, stop. Yeah. All right. And obviously Bruce had to take a lot of pain meds to get over that back injury and stuff like that. So for sure, you know, a certain amount of his drug use was to alleviate this very painful back injury. Right. But it's, I think, a bit of a stretch to think that he got into cocaine because of his back pain. So some people have said that, and it's like, well, okay, like, look, I'm not a drug genius, all right? Mm. Bruce himself in the letters say that he told Bob Baker, it's like, I need the cocaine because it's helping me write this character.
Yeah.
So he's using it for creative purposes, and I don't really think that being high on cocaine is going like, well, my back feels amazing on this. I don't think that is the intended effect or use of cocaine, right? Mm. So it really doesn't make sense, but – you know, if you talk about things being like gateway drugs, you know, are the pain meds kind of the gateway to getting into harder stuff? I don't know. Maybe. All right. But for sure, after 1971, Bruce was taking some pretty regular, you know, Bruce's drug use had definitely shifted gears after 1971. All right. So, yeah. All right, man. Next question.
All right. So next up, we got Dryzen.
What?
I don't get it. All right, go ahead.
Let's see. You don't get it.
Huh? I don't get this guy gets in every episode.
He's not in every episode.
Yeah, first of all, yes, he is. Secondly, he doesn't ever seem to be in any of the comments.
That's right.
He's in all the comments. I see him all the time.
Okay, here's what I want you to do.
When I'm riding the train back to Jersey, I see his comments.
Send me screenshots. Does he delete them after he writes them? What's going on?
That guy is...
He's a phantom.
Yeah, he doesn't exist, or rather, he does,
yeah.
Dre.
All right, let's go.
So Dryzen is asking a hypothetical.
Shocker.
So... he's asking, so one day you're teaching the bomb class up on the fifth floor, and it's about a good 20, 25 of us, boom, 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 bam, you know, boom, breaking bones.
Is this
and
even
shit.
Something written down somewhere,
yeah,
on
right
this
here.
Green earth?
It's breaking. We up there rattling.
Yes.
Rattling shit.
You know, I could see now because you got sunglasses on. I could see what's on that screen. It's blank.
It's literally blank. It's right here.
All right, let's go.
And all of a sudden, the bell rings. The buzzer.
Yes.
And then, you know, it buzzes again, beep, and then like, you like, yo, open, someone buzz that person in. And then Of course, I'm like right there by the door usually. I buzz them in.
Is that your impression of Seagum, by the way?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that was legit.
Uh-huh.
I've been practicing that
amazing.
Shit.
Wow.
So, a few maybe seconds later, dude busts in, and he's looking all confused, like, and you're looking at him, and you're all confused, like, yo, and everyone turns,
because
they see your face.
By the way, this situation happens pretty regularly at City Ring Show. The number of people who come up to the fourth floor and then they go. Well,
he busts into the fifth floor.
Is this a tattoo shop?
Yeah. Well, he made it past the fourth floor somehow.
Uh-huh.
And he's up on the fifth floor. And everyone sees your face.
Uh-huh.
And then they look at the door. They're like, oh. And then they, you know, you're like, can I help you? And he's like, I'm here for Yip Man's class, but obviously not Yip Man's class.
I've actually had someone say that before, by the way. I've actually had someone come in here and ask me if Yip Man teaches here. Wow. And the person was dead serious. And I was like, Yip Man died in 1972. And he was like, no, I just saw him in a movie.
You're lying.
No. And I just looked at the guy and I was like, no, this is some New York shit, man. This did happen. Wow. Ask your Simo.
Yo.
Yeah.
Anyway, you realize it's a young Bruce.
Uh-huh.
And he just literally went through a time vortex. Didn't even understand what happened. He came up here through a time vortex. But you figured it out before he did.
Obviously.
Yes. Because you've been through so many of these time vortexes.
Clearly.
It's a normal thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And
language.
I'm sorry, what?
Our poor editor Andrew, he has to constantly keep his finger on the buzzer with you.
Did Dryson put the F word into the comments?
Yes.
You're clearly right.
Again, he has not even looked down once while he's saying this question. And by the way, the setups of the questions now take so long. Get to the point.
The question is, do you take him on as a new student? Because he can't go back. There's no way for him to go back.
He's here now. Yes.
Young Bruce.
Right.
And you know what's happening to him. You know he's in a time vortex. You know that he has to continue his studies.
Right.
So do you take him as the new student of City Wing Chun?
Yes, of course.
And be like, yo, this is what's happening to you.
Yes.
You're this guy.
Right.
This is you.
Yes.
You have to continue to learn here now.
Right, right.
Because your ass ain't going back to the 50s.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I would teach him Wing Chun.
Yeah.
I would introduce him to...
Would you long pole him and sword him?
Whoa, take it easy.
Bajam do him?
What does it mean to long pole him? I don't understand that, all right? This is not a normal thing we say in the Wing Chun world. Would you long pole him? I don't know about that.
Would you teach him the long pole Bajam do
him? I would teach him the whole system.
It. Okay.
And introduce him to boxing, introduce him to fencing,
okay.
Introduce him to some jiu-jitsu, show him lots of fights, you know, kind of round out his education because he's already got the brain for these kind of things, right? Give him a jump start on the things that maybe would have taken him a few years to figure out. Just give him pack all that information in there, train him, give him everything, right? And then once he knows all this martial arts stuff, okay?
You become his agent.
No, I would put him in serious drug education at that point. All right.
What was the back in the day?
No.
Dare. D-A-R-E, drug, something.
This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
You show them the skillet and everything. And
the skillet and the egg.
Yeah.
Any questions? And then I would be like, look, all right, let's see what happens to people who regularly abuse cocaine. All right. He's like very young, right? And he's like, why do I always have this?
Like
no, no, no.
18, right?
Yeah. It's like, no. You're like, why are you showing me this stuff? You know, you're always showing me martial arts stuff. No. I just need to show you this.
Yeah.
All right. I just need to show you this. Yeah. All right. Yes. So there you go.
Man.
And if you really still don't believe me, here's Mikey Dean.
That's right. Yeah. If you don't believe me, listen to my sound dude. He knows a thing or two. About the cokes.
You don't want to get like him.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's how you...
There you go.
Get him. All right. Thank you, Dryzen, for that question.
Wow, we managed to get through that one pretty quickly. Well done.
You're yeah, learning. Normally he doesn't let me off the hook with us. He doesn't even want to finish the episode until I give him some bullshit answer.
Right. No, but
today he was satisfied with my bullshit answer to the bullshit question.
Dryzen was satisfied, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next up.
You got a psychic connection to him, right?
No.
You guys have like Vulcan mind melded together, right?
Now, if you actually read what's on his screen, it says, "All work and no play makes Dryzen a very dull boy."
Ooh, Shining reference.
Damn.
All right, let's go.
Damn, Dryzen. All right, Michael Flynn. Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Do you find that muscular guys like myself have a hard time learning WT? And do women pick up the concepts of WT faster than guys? Thank you.
That's a great question. It's always impossible to say, you know, all people in this group are blah, 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 and all people in this group are blah, blah, blah. Normally, when people say, like, you know, all muscle-bound people cannot learn Wing Chun, usually two things are occurring, all right? Either they are just telling you what their teacher told them, all right? It's a common trope, not just in traditional martial arts, but also in boxing. In fact, this morning I was just watching, you know, Teddy Atlas and his podcast, right?
Okay.
And he was talking about the Deontay Wilder-Tyson Fury fight and talking about how Wilder was too muscle-bound for this fight. And, you know, there's the constant debate, and he was talking about how the old boxing masters basically, you know, were all against weightlifting and all that kind of stuff. And he says they were right for the most part, because obviously if you're too muscle bound, you know, you have to provide oxygen to all those extra muscles. So, you know, in the context of boxing, it can make you slower.
Mm-hmm.
He said Deontay Wilder was like someone who was wearing a suit that was two sizes too small for him, because he just has all this extra weight, and you get tired. And so your conditioning is going to be taxed a lot more when you have this extra, you know, extra muscle mass. Now, of course, that's a little bit different than whether you can get good at Wing Chun or not, because we're not talking about fighting in a, you know, multiple rounds in boxing. We're talking about a traditional martial art. So the requirements are like a little bit different. But even the whole thing about not lifting weights and not being too muscle bound is not solely something you hear about in traditional martial arts, but even in boxing. And then, but Teddy Atlas actually said, but actually they were kind of both wrong and right. He goes, because there's a way you can lift weights.
Mm-hmm.
An intelligent way where you can improve strength and your movement abilities and your mobility and everything like that without becoming too muscle bound. And I think that's usually the problem when people talk about whether you should. Now, I know he's talking about like muscle, like whether someone is like muscle bound or whatever. And here I'm talking a little bit more about the methods. People conflate strength training and bodybuilding. Okay. These are two different things. You can lift weights in both of them, but it's about the aims. In bodybuilding, the aim is aesthetics. You want to have a well-balanced and well-proportioned physique in that kind of classic sense. You know, for men, you know, you have the big pecs and the big round delts and the shoulders and the triceps and the biceps and the legs and everything like that.
Like myself, yes.
Exactly like you. You are the gold standard of
bodybuilding.
Of bodybuilding, right?
The
exactly.
Gold standard. In
the road.
The rogue.
So basically, when in the old days, you know, when people like Sifu Leung Ting would say you shouldn't lift weights, or, you know, old boxer trainers would say that, oftentimes it's you shouldn't do bodybuilding. Okay. Because the problem is you're building a lot of this muscle mass, which is for aesthetics, which can be antithetical to your aims in martial arts, right? One, you now carry all this extra mass on you, which has to get oxygen through, you know, through your cardiovascular system, right? So now you got to do a lot more work to be able to perform as long as someone who doesn't have as much of that muscle mass, right? So, but there is a huge glaring, like these are two completely different worlds, the world of bodybuilding and the world of strength training. All right. Strength training is usually literally what it says is about becoming stronger. And you can use weights, you can use body weight, you can use bands, you can do explosive stuff. That's a much broader type thing. And even if you lift weights, the difference between strength training and, let's say, bodybuilding is in strength training in general, you tend to do more compound things where you're using multiple muscle groups in one lift, where your legs, your upper body, your arms, everything to perform it. So you're using the body as a complete organism rather than separating it. Whereas in bodybuilding, you might just do bicep curls.
A lot
just
of isolation.
You have some isolation, right? Although good bodybuilders usually mix compound movements and isolated movements, right? But their number one concern is not how mobile are they, how well do they move, and how good is their cardio. Their concern is how big are their arms, how, you know, compared to how big is their upper body compared to their waist, you know, I mean, like their chest size, these kind of proportions, right?
Yeah, it's so tough for me.
So I think that, yeah, it must be tough for you. Yeah, yeah. So I think the difficult part is for people to realize, hey, all right, bodybuilding is not the same as strength training or powerlifting, for example, right? So to say that every single person who does bodybuilding has no chance to learn Wing Chun, I think is usually either said by people who, well, Sifu said, if you're a bodybuilder, you can't learn Wing Chun. Or, quite honestly, what's often the case in the terms of Wing Chun is a lot of the Wing Chun instructors, they don't have a lot of students. So the problem is you have sampling bias. If you've taught for 10 years, but in those 10 years, you've only taught 40 people over the course, you have a very small sample. Okay. And if you had one bodybuilder in there that was not very mobile, didn't move very well, there you go. Yeah, bodybuilders can't learn Wing Chun, all right? But we here at City Wing Chun have a student who's a bodybuilder.
Oh, yeah.
And
Mr. Universe, former Mr. Universe.
Yeah, I don't know what level he competed at, but he's very, very high level, all right? And, you know, he's older now. He's not actively competing, but he did compete for many, many years. And he still actively bodybuilds. I mean, the dude is shorter than me and outweighs me by, you know, 40 pounds, right? He's just jacked. So he's an older bodybuilder. So he has the additional disadvantage of he's got all the injuries from years of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And he has the classic issues that a lot of bodybuilders have. Obviously, it's harder for him to move his elbows in because of he's got massive chesticles.
Like myself.
And yes, and you know the big delts and everything like that. But what did we teach him to do? We teach him how to overcome those limitations by adapting his Wing Chun to his body type. And I feel that a lot of Wing Chun instructors are like, oh, if your muscles are too big, you can't bring your elbows in and you can't do good Wing Chun. Well, that's a great cop-out to not figure out a way to make Wing Chun work for someone who's got a different body type. As if everyone in the world has the body type of Grandmaster Yip Man, 5'2" and, you know, 95 pounds soaking wet. You know what I mean?
Like myself.
Like you also, right? So there's the issue, right? So, I mean, of course, if you had one or two bodybuilders, because before, before Tom, I taught a number of bodybuilders and they were all pretty terrible. All right. Mm-hmm. They had a very difficult time moving. They had very limited flexibility. All right. Tom has an amazing vertical jump. I don't know if you ever seen him do a vertical jump. He can do a front tuck roll into an explosive jump, and he's got higher vertical than me. All right. It's crazy. All right. And I can jump very high. It's incredible.
What?
Yeah. And you look at that and you go, what? Right. Really incredible. Really incredible. And he's got a lot more mass. Right. And he's very athletic because he also emphasized athletics at the time he was doing bodybuilding. Mm. Some bodybuilders, they even can do backflips. Generally, those are bodybuilders who also do compound stuff and pull-ups and lots of, you know.
You see them in Times Square.
Yeah. So the problem is you cannot say every single person who's muscle-bound cannot be good at Wing Chun, all right? You could say there's certain limitations that often come along with that body type. But a good Wing Chun instructor can teach someone to get around those limitations. For example, the elbow in issue. You know who else has an elbow in issue? Women with big chests.
Okay.
Okay. So what are you going to say? A woman wants to come to you and learn self-defense and is built a certain way and you can't bring your elbows in, I can't teach you Wing Chun. What kind of nonsense is that?
Total.
All right. No, you have to make adaptations based on the person's body type, right? And if you can't do that as an instructor, I don't think you really understand Wing Chun that well. Because then you're just saying like, no, if you're not gifted with a certain narrow sliver of genetics and a body type, I can't teach you. Well, like that's crap. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody can swim. Maybe they cannot be like Michael Phelps, but people can still swim even if they have a different body type, right? So I stay away from these all X body type cannot or can do Wing Chun, right? In general, women, I find, pick up Wing Chun a lot more quickly because for a number of different reasons. And again, you cannot say all women this or all women that, just like you cannot say all men this, all men that. But I find that oftentimes it's easier to teach women for one very simple reason. Okay. In Wing Chun, one of the big things we have to understand is you're abandoning your own force because more than likely your opponent is going to be stronger than you. right? So the first step is to abandon your own force to learn how to do movements without antagonistic muscle tension. Because if you're fighting your own movements, you're doing a punch, but your shoulder's up, your chest is unnecessarily tense, you're tensing all these extra things. Well, now in a art of war kind of way, you're fighting a war on two fronts. You're fighting yourself and the person who's in front of you, because you're fighting your own antagonistic muscle strength. So the first lesson is to stop fighting with yourself, both mentally, all right, there's a mental aspect to that, and a physical aspect to that. And these are carried out through the learning of the first form in Wing Chun. And so then after that, you have to learn how to then now that you've learned to deal with your own force, which is to not be controlled by it, now you have to learn to deal with your opponent's force. And you have to learn to unload your opponent's force or borrow it. These are the two main ideas that we learn in Chi Sao and in sparring. And so my experience is that if you tell a female student, imagine your opponent is bigger and stronger than you, she has a much easier time imagining that.
Yeah.
You tell a dude, imagine your opponent is bigger and stronger than you.
Oh, no.
And the dude can say, you know, especially if a guy is smaller, of a smaller stature, I don't care how big or strong you are. You could be a big, strong jack dude. You understand that there are people out there bigger and stronger than you. And if you're a smaller person, you definitely understand that. But to a certain degree, the male ego, we get it cognitively, but we're also like, yo, frick that, man. The dude tries to bump, push me, I'm going to push you back.
Yeah.
Because we have this intense, immediate, visceral reaction when someone pushes us to push back and to use force and to escalate force.
Damn.
Because it's kind of the way men are built, all right? In my experience, of course, all right? So it takes a little bit longer to get a dude to come to terms with their ego. There are people bigger and stronger than you, and you always have a problem with the strong dudes in class. Because oftentimes the strongest dude in the class is able to manhandle everyone else. Great. Your Wing Chun is good only in as far as your opponent is equal to or less than your strength.
Yeah, like the Enricos of life.
Yes, and like if you are using brute power against all of your training partners in class, I'm going to tell you something that you're not going to be happy to hear. You're going to get attacked by someone who's bigger and stronger and heavier than you. 100%. So you practice manhandling people who are smaller than you. You are not at all learning the skill of unloading and borrowing power. And you always come with the assumption that you can just hold your arm really stiff or use brute power and stop the other person. What happens when you don't have that as an option? So that's why even the bigger, stronger students in class, I advise them. Even if you are physically stronger than your partner, which you more than likely are, pretend you're not. Because even if you are physically, like if I'm physically stronger than you and you give me a punch and I could stop your punch just by holding my forearm with brute strength. Okay, I stop it. Oh, I stopped you. All right. But the person on the street who has no respect for me or who I am or whatever is going to come full power and try to smash my face. Maybe I can't stop him. But let's say I could. But if I unload their power and move out of the way, I take that same heavy force, let it miss me, and then I can go in and punch them. So what do I get by imagining my opponent is bigger and stronger? Even when I am stronger than my opponent, I still have nothing but advantage. Men take a long time to figure this out. They get it here and finally like, oh, maybe I should relax. All right? 2 years in. 4 years later, oh, I can use a lot of brute strength, but if I just turn and give way, even the guy who's weaker than me falls forward and I'm in a better position. Like I told you the second week you joined.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. A woman, you tell them, imagine your opponent's bigger and stronger than you. You want to move out of the way. They go, got it. They got it. Now they just have to learn how to apply the techniques and principles to be able to apply it. But the men need like 4 years for their ego to be like, okay, there are people who are stronger than me.
Wow.
I guess I'll concede that. And that, for me, is the main difference,
independent
of body type. And that's all I got to say about that. All right, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that episode of The Kung Fu Genius. And as always, if you have questions, things you want me to answer on a future episode, go ahead and write them in the comments below. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to The Kung Fu Genius and hit that bell for notifications. And I'll see you guys next time.
Word is I'm a kung fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your kung fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor.
Alright.
What? Carry on.
Jesus Christ. Getting eaten his crisps over there. Let's get to it. All right, that sounds good. Jesus Christ. It made me shit my pants.
Let's get to it.
What the hell just happened?
What happened?
What happened?
It's the shades.
That was legitimately one take, and it was great.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you, like, nailed it. Like,
it was
the
shades.
The apocalypse is nigh.
No, all right,
let's kill it.